Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the United Pulse podcast. Quick announcement before we kick off the episode. Obviously, as you can tell from the title, you're about to listen to part two of our discussion here, where we dived in a little bit more of a stronger focus on transfers. So if you listen to part one, you'll get a good understanding of just the Manchester United team, club. We analyze some players, overrated, underrated, areas to improve on, things like that. So it's a really, really good discussion. I personally very much enjoyed it. But this part, we're going to talk a little bit more specifically on transfers. So you don't necessarily even need to be a United fan to enjoy this. Actually, you can just be a Premier League fan, or maybe you like to play a lot of Football Manager, whatever it is. Either way, if you're interested in introductions, who everyone is, everything like that, I'd recommend listening to the first couple of minutes of part one. That'll give you an idea of who we're speaking with, all of that information. Otherwise, we're just going to dive right into part two here. So let's go. All right, so let's move into the next bit that we're going to talk about here. Is kind of a little bit more of a heavy focus on transfers. I really pride myself on just not watching a lot of other teams and clubs across Europe. I think that's something I'm proud of. I have no patience to watch like a Lazio versus Inter Milan. I don't have the patience.
I'll watch that any day of the week.
I just don't. I have nothing against these clubs or anything like that, but it's just, I don't know. I love the Premier League. For me, give me a Brighton versus Sheffield over Clasico. Honestly, I'm really that guy. Shockingly enough.
Interesting.
So,
we'll insult them if you want, Alfie, because I'm not that crazy.
Well, no, and I say that most of that is because we don't have the channels and streaming and so that's really most of the reason for that. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying that to qualify that when a lot of these guys are talking about transfers linking us to a lot of players, I'll hear a lot of names that maybe I haven't seen too much of. So I do want to get your thoughts and your ideas on some players that maybe might be beneficial for our team. So I'm thinking if we can start with the midfield option. So CM, CDM, 8, 6, 10, whatever you want to call it. If you can kind of give us an idea of what players you think would be good for our team, and obviously why.
Okay, so you need a 6, right? I think everyone's in agreement here that you do need a defensive midfielder. If Matic is aging and McTominay is, he looks to be a more box-to-box presence and Fred is not ideal, it's fair to say, even if you only spent 25 million on one, you do need a defensive midfielder.
Okay, yeah, right? Yeah, I'm with you there.
So, you know, you might not need a 70 million Declan Rice, but you do probably need a sitting presence. So my pick for a cheaper option, although I don't think he'll be that cheap, would probably be Turn Coop Miners of AZ Alkmaar. So
just signed him in Football Manager.
Yeah. You can watch him at the Euros, I think. He might be behind Daley Blind in the pecking order because they play a weird free back. But so my cheaper option would be Turn Coop Miners, and my more expensive option would be Wilfred Ndidi, provided you buy a ball-playing centre-back. They're my two options as a 6. So I'll run through Coop Miners first. Mm-hmm. So he's 23... been playing in a pivot this year, pivot kind of, or as a lone DM for Alkmaar this year. He's got an unbelievable passing range, genuinely unbelievable. I think he made a 80-yard assist or something from his own penalty box to literally the other penalty box against Ajax last season. He's a captain at 23, so that's great for leadership, etc. He can defend really well. He's got really good defensive numbers, even if he's not that mobile, but he's great as a kind of just Matic-style defender. He might be better suited to a pivot, but I think he could get used to a lone DM in the Premier League, you know, given time. He's kind of, he would work in both a counter-attacking team because he's robust. He's basically Matic. He's also left-footed, but he's got a much better passing range. And he'd also work in a ball-dominant team because he's good
he's
at circulating.
Not slow, the... I assume.
Yeah. He's not quick, but he's quick enough like Matic was. If you know what I mean. Perfect. His positionally, he's good enough that's not an issue for him. And he's strong. He's built like an ox. So Ndidi would cost more, right? That's fair to say. Leicester wouldn't, you know, give you him for cheap. And he's more solely focused on the counter-attacking setup, which is fine because that's, you know, kind of clearly what Ollie favors more. Mm-hmm. But I'd only get him as long as you keep Pogba or buy someone in the same Pogba mold and sign Pogba possibly a ball-playing centre-back to account for the fact that he's not a great ball player. The potential for a Ndidi, Pogba, Fernandes midfield is really high, right? That is genuinely a Champions League winning midfield. I don't really have a problem with Ndidi being your only ball winner because Fernandes is a really active presser and Pogba can help out. So that midfield seems functional enough to me in terms of ball recovery. You could do a similar thing when playing out from the back that Madrid do too with Casemiro, and kind of similar to Leicester as well. They put Ndidi, or in that case Casemiro, pushing higher to win knockdowns from long balls and drag away your kind of the 10 marker and rely on a better technical player in midfield. So in Madrid's case, that's Kroos or Modric. In Leicester's case, that's Yuri Tielemans and a Pogba for you. It could go wrong, right? And he'd be very expensive. It could go wrong because there's multiple factors. You know, some people are better at being a big fish in a small pond, etc. But they're my two options. And I think Coop Miners is best. I think he's off to Atalanta, though, so that could be a problem for you. So yeah, they're my two options, Wilfred Ndidi and Coop Miners. And you'll have a chance to watch Coop Miners this year if you watch the Euros, because I think he will start.
You're out of luck, Eames. Sorry.
On occasion. And
I'll tell you how it goes. I'll be watching quite literally every game.
Yeah, well, there we go.
So that's very interesting, because that is the ideal, you know, defensive midfielder, number six, whatever you want to call it. That's like the ideal mold, especially if you're trying to keep Pogba, because Pogba does well when he doesn't have to do, I don't want to say any of it, a majority of the quote unquote dirty work, right?
He chips in, but he's not the ball.
That's not what he's there for, right?
Yeah.
And I think, and like I mentioned when we were talking about, you know, Pogba playing with Conte for France, like that's really the type of mold of player that will really get the best out of him. And like I said, we tried with Matic or we tried with Fred and they weren't really it. Ndidi is probably, at least out of all the DMs I could think of off the top of my head, who's a quote unquote available, that is like for Conte. Obviously, he's not as good as Conte. Conte's still number one, but Ndidi fits that mold because you take all the, hypothetically, you would take all the pressure off of Pogba and Bruno to do what they do, just create, get chances in the final third. And then Ndidi just needs to, that's why I don't know if I agree with the ball playing center back, because all he has to do is wait for one of those two guys to drop back and give it to them. And then he could just reset and stay in his lane, as, you know, quote unquote, what someone would say.
And just one last point before we move on to the next question. What do you think of McFred?
They have their uses. That's what I'm going to say. They have their uses. There's no chance. If you even dream about starting them consistently next year, you're wasting away your title charges.
It's not a functional
midfield. If McTominay could theoretically work as just literally dynamic presence, ball winner, but Fred doesn't have the facilities to be a top class ball progressor, because I don't know. It doesn't seem. Fred last year was pretty good. This year he's seen a cataclysmic decline. So yeah,
you are shooting Eames right in the heart. Eames came with a knife and you came with a glass, man. Bro.
Right, you know ball.
No, I mean, listen. I'm a McFred stan. Ride or die. I love McFred. I'm just so proud of them. I've just seen so many great games from them. That's the reason for it. And so I put the signing a midfielder a little bit lower on the totem pole, especially like a six. So I like your second suggestion much more than the Ndidi suggestion, just because he would cost so much. I think he's obviously a good player. I just don't rate him as highly as many people do, purely because he gets injured a lot. I think he suffers or benefits from small fish or fish in a small pond syndrome too.
Big fish, small pond.
Yeah, I think he really benefits from that. But I appreciate the thoughtfulness in your answers there, because you did give us some pretty good analysis on some players. Do you have any center back suggestions? You kind of hinted at it. You said ball playing center, hinted at it a little bit. Want to hear your thoughts there?
So I think center back. I think you need a left foot in defense. You haven't had one for a while. I think that's fair to say. A left footer would unlock a lot of different possibilities for you. I think Lindelof and Maguire. I know Lindelof isn't exactly popular. I'm not a proponent of his. I think individually he's quite a good defender, but he does not work with Maguire, because Maguire is a cover defender, right? He's not the one that's always consistently steps out of the defensive line to try and break up attacks. He's not a Joe Gomez, he's not a Sergio Ramos kind of type player where he's got the athleticism to go out and press the attacker. So I think, and I wouldn't prioritize a centre back this season, but I would say if you could get a Sven Botman from Lille, a 6'4", really, a good ball player, really physical. Looks really well built to be a centre back in the Premier League. He wouldn't cost extremely much. I think maybe 35 to 40 million, you're probably about to get him. Maybe even less, because all French clubs are kind of going through a financial mess right now. Mm-hmm. I think, but I've seen a lot of links to Pau Torres. I think he's an excellent, excellent defender in the right system. He's just a bit passive. He's similar to Lindelof, so it could work out really well. You know, he could be kind of the John Stones, or he could be the Lindelof. He's got that kind of one of two ways kind of going for that type of defender. Mm-hmm. He's also too pretty to be a centre-back. You know, you can't be a model and be a centre-back, right? That's just not working. I think I've seen a lot of links to Jules Koundé. Koundé could work, but I said you need someone to be aggressive. Koundé is extremely aggressive. He likes to play defensive midfield, basically. And Maguire isn't exactly the sharpest on the turn, so it could work really well, but Koundé could also leave a kind of slow Maguire 1v1 quite a lot. I think the final one for Varane, high risk, high reward for Varane. I think that's fair to say.
Okay.
Great player previously when Ramos was holding his hand, and he might need a new challenge. He might have just got bored in Spain. He's been there for 8 years. Mm-hmm. He just might need a new club, but he's also been a bit passive. He's got the Lindelof syndrome. It seems to me there's no clear cut answer for your centre back. I think whoever you get, they'll probably be an upgrade, even though you have a great defensive record. You don't have a great defensive record when it matters. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of fair to say. Mm-hmm. It's not just about kind of spending 80 million on Kalulu Koulibaly because he's a great name. Mm-hmm. It's about buying smart, because you've bought big players in the past. The Woodwards have kind of satisfied the demand by buying a big player every year, apart from last year. It's not about just getting the biggest name possible. You've got to buy smart now, because mm-hmm. your squad is bloated with players that are inconsistent, like Pogba, bloated with, you've got a lot of Axel Tuanzebe and Eric Bailly's, and that's another problem you've got. You've got Phil Jones on your payroll still. So it's about buying.
Phil Jones! Think about that for a second.
So I'm still paying him.
Wait, sorry, real quick. So you just on the record, you don't rate Eric Bailly and Tuanzebe?
I don't like Tuanzebe a lot. I think he's got potential, but I haven't seen enough of him consistently. Eric Bailly is he tried to do an overhead kick in his own 6-yard box.
We literally said that. Oh my god!
I think he's got a lot of talent. Right, he's great for two games. And then he gets injured, or he does some stupid, stupid shit. He's really aggressive in defensive duels, and he shouldn't be. And he's not the player that, again, you want if you're trying to go for a league push.
Okay. Do you, and before we move
I
on?
I just have one quick question. I just want to hop on about Botman, because I can see Botman as an option that the club's looking for, but I just think that his pace and Maguire's pace just wouldn't work. It would leave us quite exposed. I just want to know your thoughts on that.
That's completely fair. I think Botman isn't slow. I'm going to prefix that. Botman is not slow, but he's in a Sulem or kind of mold centre back, where he's really slow at the start, but once he gets going, he's quick. So I think that's a valid concern. I also think if you've got, say, someone like Ndidi and Botman, and if Oli, does some works on counter-pressing over the summer, you could kind of neglect that, because you could, win the ball back or prevent the ball from being played over the top before that becomes a major issue. Because I can say the similar thing about Lindelof and Maguire. Neither of them are especially rapid, but you're kind of getting away with it because you've got some fairly good pressure from Fernandez, some fairly good pressure from McTominay if he's playing. So I don't think it's about pace. It's about kind of building the team to prevent any weaknesses being exposed.
I think one of the problems with Manchester United, specifically like defensively, I guess you could say, is we try to play a high line, and this is what really exposed us in the 6-1 loss to Spurs. Yeah. Is we try playing a high line, and it's evident that Lindelof and Maguire aren't the quickest center backs, especially Maguire. But there is something I wanted to bring up. Now, this is from the 2019-20 season. This was after most teams in Europe had played around 40 games. I forget, but hold on, let me just see when this was exactly posted. yeah, it doesn't say. But at this stage in the season, let's just say all the big clubs have played 43 matches. United were only second to PSG in terms of clean sheets. PSG had 22 and 41, and Man United had 17 and 42. And this was with Maguire and Lindelof being the primary center backs. So, I mean, this season obviously didn't, you know, work out as well. But if you look at where we finished in the table, we finished a little higher. And I agree with you, and I think you said it brilliantly. Center back shouldn't be a priority over other positions, other positional needs. But I just wanted to point out that, you know, they're not like Lindelof and Maguire aren't the worst fit. And Colin has been a big proponent of this. I saw him kind of celebrating to himself when he said they don't work together. But I mean, at the end of the day, like you look at the results, I know we could talk statistical numbers about clearances, tackles, blah, blah, blah. But if you look at it in terms of wins, losses, and draws, Lindelof and Maguire this season, they weren't that bad. You know what I mean? So I just like, I mean, maybe I'm just trying to defend Lindelof because I felt like you were a little too harsh on him, but it's more that like at the end of the day, like we do still perform well with those two guys on the side. I'm not against signing a center back, but I don't know if you prioritize him over signing a right winger, which brings us to our next question, Eames.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've been linked with Jadon Sancho for a year now, a year and a half, maybe something like that. So we don't need to harp on him. We wanted to get an idea from you. You've given us some really good suggestions in terms of possible signings, alternatives, kind of hidden gems, things like that. We want to get your hidden gems for right wing or maybe left wing. I don't know what you got, but someone who's an alternative to Jadon Sancho if that deal falls through.
Yeah, okay. I'm just going to quickly say sorry for a lack of audio quality. I've had to take my headphones out and put my phone on charge because it's on 1%. But
no worries. But,
I've got four right wingers, I think, here. And I'm tempted to say that one of them might be a smarter signing than Jadon Sancho.
Okay.
I've got four. So Rafinha, Ousmane Dembele, Pedro Neto, and Serge Gnabry. So that's a bold list.
Sorry, before you continue, made it this far into the podcast. I just want to give you a formal thank you. Continue, go ahead.
So Rafinha is the best there for me. On the right wing, as a right winger, he's probably better than Sancho. As a right winger, Sancho is the better player, but on the right, I think I'd rather have Rafinha, purely for the fact that he's more effective on the right.
Oh, are you okay over there, buddy? Yeah, you. No, you, Colin.
Yeah.
You didn't get the joke, but go ahead, continue. Sorry, Alfie.
My problem with Sancho on the right is that he is infinitely better on the left. Sancho on the right, Sancho needs space to work with. That's my main problem with him. I still think he's an excellent player. I personally think my hot take is that he's a slightly better talent than Haaland, but he needs a lot of space to work with. And that's why he excels in the Bundesliga. You get more time on the ball. There's higher lines to play against. Dortmund, you know, counter press well, et cetera, et cetera. You won't get that on the right, nor will you get that in the Premier League. The reason it worked on the right in the first few seasons is that he had Hakimi bombing on and almost pegging back the opposition fullback. You don't get that with Wan-Bissaka for all of his defensive acumen. So is it worth spending, I don't know, whatever it is now, 90 million on a player that isn't going to be used to his full potential, especially when he's going to likely be your sole signing for the summer? Now, say you have to use to put Rashford on the right and put Sancho on the left, I am completely for that deal, although Rashford would obviously need work on the right. But I think if you're going to sign a right winger and it's Sancho, there's a lot of risk factor for that. He's not the guaranteed fix to all of your problems like some fans think he is. That's my personal hot take on it. I think he's an unbelievable player, don't get me wrong. And yeah, I think my hot take is that he's a slightly better talent than Haaland. But as a left winger, brilliant, brilliant signing. Only person that could maybe be better for you is, apart from whatever, Neymar and Mbappe, Jack Grealish. But as a right winger, I think, yeah, there's slightly better options. So I'll go through, unless you've got something to go.
No, please. I want to hear your options.
So I really love Rafinha, right, for Leeds. So he's really direct.
Yeah, I want to hear that.
He suits a counter. He's especially a great presser with Bielsa to thank for that. He's a creator who you desperately need, obviously. And he's really, really unpredictable and a great 1v1 dribbler. And it's helpful considering who he has behind him, where he might not get a lot of support. He's also at a great age, so that if he left in 3 years, that's kind of the perfect time for Ahmad or Palestri to come in and take that rowing spot. He's also left-footed, so he's naturally going to be more of an effective presence, but he does like to hold width on the right rather than just come in every single time. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of good for Wan-Bissaka because Wan-Bissaka doesn't exactly bomb on. So if you need someone to hold a whip from the right, that could be Rafinha for you. That's my two cents on Rafinha. And he's obviously he's going to be expensive, but he wouldn't nearly cost as much as Sancho. Ousmane Dembele. So I'd like to, I think if you got him on loan, that's a great signing. If you bought him, that's a bit risky. He's been at Barca, but his first two seasons were pretty good. And he was obviously unplayable at Dortmund. I like him for pretty much the exact same reasons as Rafinha. He's ambidextrous too, which is, you know, a very big plus. That's really perfect. If you get him on loan, it's a very low risk signing. That means you can invest elsewhere in, say, maybe a top DM or a top striker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you got Dembele on loan but got Haaland this year, that's a pretty good window. Pedro Neto is really interesting. I really, really, really like him, and it might be too soon for him to move though. So he's fantastic creatively, and he develops on the path that he is currently. He'd pretty much be your ideal right winger, but it might be a little bit early because he just had his breakout season, and I'm not sure against his mentality. He's got an injury that he's kind of still working through even. So yeah, and then my wild card is Serge Gnabry. So Gnabry is extremely unrealistic, probably not going to happen, but he's one of the only right wingers in the world that's right footed and is probably better for it. His shooting technique on his right foot is unbelievable, that he angles his body perfectly, whereas you need a left footer typically to get that good shooting technique on the right. He might be getting bored of Bayern. He's been there, I don't know, four years, yeah, because he was at Stuttgart or
Werder. He spent a year on loan at like Stuttgart,
Werder Bremen, I think.
Werder Bremen was the one, yeah.
Yeah, and he might, you know, he obviously wouldn't be your exact fix to the creative issue, but he's creatively good enough. I think last year he got 20 big chances created, which is miles clear of anyone in your squad, and would rank him as the second best creator in the league last year behind only De Bruyne. So it's not exactly like he's not creative, it's just that's not his play style. So he's my wild card pick, and if he was available, say, because Bayern have a lot of wingers and they're also now apparently chasing Hudson-Odoi again, it won't be smart to go for him. So yeah, those are my four players, although obviously I'm gonna, you know, buy in and say Sancho is very, very good. Very, very good. So yeah, that's what I
Just before everybody, I know Colin has a lot to say. I know Eames definitely has a lot to say. I just want to chime in with two quick things. One, Eames, I didn't hear Ayoze Perez, Adama Traore, Gareth Bale, any of these whack names you gave us last summer. These are some good options here. Number two, there is a Bayern winger you didn't mention in your list that we've been linked with for some unknown reason. Is Kingsley Coman. I mean, what do you think of him as a potential? Yes. He could play right or left. So I was just figuring I'd ask before they give their thoughts on what you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a valid reason to ask. I'm mixed on Kingsley Coman. I think he's got moments of brilliance, but he's also been he hasn't been great this year comparative to what he was last year. He's not especially creative. So last year he had 17 starts, which is, you know, fair enough. 4 goals, but 7 big chances missed, 3 assists, 9 big chances created, which is better. This year, 5 goals, 2 big chances missed, 10 assists, 11 big chances created. He's a pretty good dribbler. He's not overtly a bad signing, but I think there's better players out there for the money that Bayern would want, if that makes sense. Perfect. Considering he's 24 and they don't exactly need to sell a winger.
And so, quite injury prone.
Yeah, exactly. He's extremely injury prone. So, yeah.
All right. So,
I'll hop in here, Eames. I know you've definitely got lots to say because I think Eames is definitely pro Sancho, but also would much rather us take a cheaper option and I think spend that money elsewhere. I think that's fair to categorize it as. Me, I'm like very much all in on Sancho, regardless if we play him on the right or the left. I do agree with you that I do think he is slightly better on the left the more I've watched him, but I do think on the right he is still, like, his all-around game is just still levels. And then on top of that, I think because we are so fluid in our front line, especially when we have Martial instead of Cavani, I think it's almost, not necessarily negated, but I think that freedom, because, like, Bruno Fernandes likes to drift out wide to left and right. Pogba, when he's in there, likes to drift out and create. and that allows Sancho to come in. Rashford sometimes switches wings. We've seen him and Mason switch wings mid-game. So I think that would still work. And just like you said, I mean, I don't know if – I think I would put him at the level of like a Hollander and Mbappe, but I think it's an absolutely fair take to say he's more talented.
Listen, I can't tell you. I mean, most of what you've given us in terms of kind of your takes on this show, I've really agreed with most of it. I think I sometimes have some trouble articulating certain things that I think about. And you said, you talked about one bit where you think Sancho's game wouldn't translate as cleanly as well into the Premier League in terms of having that much space, in terms of playing with Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well. And just to hear someone else say there are better options than Sancho, you gave us, let the record show, he gave us a right wing option and a left wing option with Jack Grealish, which I've said on this show, I've said Jack Grealish, I'd rather have him than Jadon Sancho. So I love that, man. I think that's awesome. I appreciate that analysis and that thought. And I agree with it very much. I like Rafinha. I like Rafinha a lot. I like Pedro Neto. I don't agree with the Dembele one. I just purely from the injury perspective, I don't want anything to do with that guy from an injury side. And I like Jack Grealish. Jack Grealish is showing he might maybe be a little injury prone. I don't really know. I haven't dug into it, but no,
he might be on the move as well after they signed Buendia.
Yeah, they got some players.
One thing though I wanted to ask is, you said something that was pretty integral and important. I should have brought this up earlier. You talked about Sancho. A lot of why Sancho is able to do very well, quote unquote, is because he had Hakimi. I'm pretty sure he had a fairly good season this year. I think it was 34 goal contributions in the league total, even after the slow start he had. And honestly, I couldn't tell you who played right back for Thomas Meunier. Thomas Meunier is his name, right?
I don't think he's.
Yeah, yeah, it was Meunier, but I'm just going to butt in and say he switched to the left.
There was Morey after his in there.
Poor batch of form, he switched to the left. Gotcha. So that's why I brought it up. He was poor because he didn't have Hakimi, and then when he switched to the left, when he had Guerrero creating more space for him and he could cut in, he was better. That's my point. Sorry.
Gotcha. No problem. I was just wondering. All right.
All right. I mean, that brings us towards the end here. Just to wrap this up, two questions for you. We'll start with the first one, which is more like Premier League focused. I want to get your idea and your take on who you think is favorite to win the league next season. I know it's early on. I know teams still haven't signed players or anything like that. But if we just assume things remain as is. Let's just do that because that's the cleanest way to do this. Let's assume everything remains as is. Nobody signs anyone else. Who do you think is favorite to win the league going into next season?
Well, that would be Mighty Tuchel's Chelsea, of course. as if no one signs anyone right now, fair. Probably City. But but if play, I think because Liverpool are likely to make another midfield signing to replace the outgoing Gini Wijnaldum, I think Mane will get back on form. Firmino's a controversial player, but he will probably get back to his this season. He hasn't been great. But he will get back to a high level. So will Mane, definitely. Salah will continue at his level. And if they get, say, I think Nico Barella is going to have a fantastic tournament. So if they go all out to someone like Nico Barella in midfield to replace him and have, say, a midfield of Thiago, Henderson, Nico Barella, that's a very strong midfield, a very strong attack. It's close. It's close between Liverpool and City. And that's really obvious to say. But I could not predict because, I don't know, if City get Kane...
It's over.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's hard to say. I'm going to go with City, but it could literally change like that.
If we sign Sancho, then you'd go with us, obviously, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, no, I love it. All right, that's fair. I mean,
let's round table it real quick. I mean, who do you think is going to win the league games?
I think if we sign James.
No, as is.
It's not going to be us. I think it's going to be Liverpool. As is, it'll be Liverpool. I hate to say it.
He said it.
I just think they'll win it as is.
Colin, how about you?
It's the same thing. It's between City and Liverpool as is. And even honestly, even if I would say expected signs, like no super surprises, I still wouldn't change my answer. I think as is, I'd be very surprised if we finish fourth.
Wow. You have no respect, bro. You have no respect. I know we have a Chelsea guest on the show, but come on, man. Back your boys. I think as is, City clear away. They won the league without a striker. So, like, clearing away at City, even with Liverpool getting Van Dijk and Joe Gomez and whoever they get back. They have Konate. They have Konate coming in too, so I guess that counts. But it's City for me.
Yeah. All right, let's close off. Give us your pick for the Euros. Euro 21 starting in, what, a handful of days? A couple of, what is it, two, 3 days? Whatever it is. Yeah.
Friday.
Who do you think is going to...
Italy.
Is that the first game? Who do you think is going to win it? Who do you think is set to have, from a player perspective, an unreal tournament? What's a team that you think is a dark horse? Maybe a team that we don't predict. Maybe the Croatia, let's call it. The Croatia Circa 2018 of this Euros. And then who do you think is the most overrated team going into it?
Okay, so I'm going to say, I made a video on this about 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. France will likely win it. But I also have a strong feeling that their extreme overconfidence and the fact that they think they're the best in the world and unbeatable will have them going out in the quarters or the semis against a Belgium or an Italy that have, you know, just want it more, basically. Player of the tournament. Oh, this is hard. Depending on how well the Netherlands do, it will likely be Memphis Depay. But if they go out in the group stages because Frank de Boer's an awful manager, then it will obviously not be Memphis Depay. I'd probably say player of the tournament then would either be Mbappe, Depay, or possibly Jack Grealish, depending on how well England do. I've got to bat my boy. And then dark horse, obviously everyone's saying it. My pick is Turkey. Everything lines up well for them. Oh. They've got a fairly easy route to the semi-finals. But should Turkey bow out, I'm going Ukraine or Russia.
Ooh,
some cold, some deep take, some deep.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that coming. Yeah, who does Russia have? Just real quick,
So they've got a pretty excellent right back in Mario Fernandez, and they've got one of my favorite players currently in from the 2018 World Cup, Alexander Golovin.
He plays at Monaco.
Yeah, Monaco Player of the Year this year. He was unbelievable. And I think there's something about a juiced up Russia team high off 2018. kind of robust, a 36-year-old striker getting a hat trick. That type of. And then Ukraine were really, really good in qualifiers. So it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of, I think they'll get through the group. And if they make a big upset, I wouldn't be surprised because every year there's an upset. So yeah, that's my 2 cents.
And what happens to England?
If we beat whoever we get in the round of 16, we'll make it to the final. If not, then we're out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think one dark horse candidate we shouldn't overlook. Shout out my guy Sam Tighe for bringing up this suggestion from Ranks FC. Austria, the main problem I have with them is that they have no idea where to play David Alaba. Because he's their best player, they've persisted with putting him in the central of the park, center midfield. He's not a really good center midfielder. He's an amazing player, but he's not really a good central midfielder considering his team around him at national level isn't that great. I think if you put him at left back and then you put Marcel Sabitzer in the middle, you could do some damage. I don't know anybody else on the team, but those two guys, Sabitzer and Alaba, are both so versatile that no matter where they're playing on the pitch, they can influence the game at any point, except when you have Alaba in the center of midfield.
Colin?
I'll give a quick rundown. I mean, France, I agree. It's kind of hard to see France losing, but once again, if they're too comfortable, they could quite easily be knocked out by, someone like a Belgium. I think Belgium are going to Belgium are looking my flop. I just think that that front three of Hazard, De Bruyne, and Lukaku, just like De Bruyne is coming off surgery, I think, with his face, and then Hazard just hasn't been the same. I think it's going to not be the same for them coming in. Player of the tournament, I think Pogba, I think he's going to have a super tournament. Or Mbappe. I think Pogba's going to have a super tournament. I really do. And then dark horse, everyone's picking Turkey. Honestly, I think a team that's not talked about enough is Italy. They haven't lost in like 25, 27 matches. They've got arguably one of the best midfields in there. Jorginho, Verratti, Nico Barella. They play Locatelli. I really like what they got going on.
It just depends on who they play defensively.
I think England is out at the round 16. I don't see them beating France, Portugal, or Germany, to be honest.
Well, they could have called in if they brought Aaron Wan-Bissaka. They wouldn't have to worry about Mbappe. But I don't know, man. I did actually, you know what? There is one more question I wanted to ask you, and I promise we'll close off after this. You know, you're from the United Kingdom, so obviously there's a lot of talk about who's going to start in the wing positions for England. Who do you think it's going to be and why? Because we have, because obviously we're EPL fans, we're fans of Manchester United, so we watch a lot of England, so we see a lot of these players play. The options are Raheem Sterling, Jack Grealish, Rashford, Sancho. We probably got some other options that I haven't even named. Foden. You know what I mean? So who, like, what do you think is the best starting two wide players, assuming Gareth Southgate goes that way, to help, you know, England get past the round of 16?
So I'd say on the left, it's pretty stone nailed in that it's going to be Jack Grealish, right? That's not really controversial. Mm-hmm. I think he's proven the fact that I think he's our second best player behind Kane. And I don't think currently there's too many England fans that would disagree with you. Every international team needs that kind of wow factor, that wow player. And he's that for us. You know, Kane's a great player, second best striker in the world, but he doesn't have the same gravity as kind of like, obviously he can be marked, but Grealish can put four players on him. And that creates so much space for other people. There's no one else that takes risks like Jack Grealish in our team, which is really, really helpful. On the right, I'd say dependent on whether Henderson or Mount plays, that's kind of another debate. I think it'll be between then Sancho and Foden. I don't think Sterling gets a look in because he's had a poor year, and I think Rashford's still slightly injured and not entirely fit, although he'll be a great option if we need a team and if we need a runner, someone to stretch the back line and get kind of a bit more pace in behind. He'll be a great kind of a different option, but whereas a Foden is more of a goal threat and Sancho is more creative, if you know what I mean.
You really think Sancho might not start?
No, Southgate doesn't love him, so I don't think.
Yeah, but what does Southgate know?
Exactly, that's a very good question. Didn't take Wan-Bissaka.
Exactly.
I think Graham Potter would do wonders with England.
I'm going to move past the fact that you incorrectly said that Harry Kane's the second best striker in the world. He's number one, undoubtedly. But I think that wraps it up for us.
It's always Lewandowski.
Just real quick, I just wanted to thank you, man. I mean, thanks for hopping on. Really appreciate it. I think we got some really
thank you so much.
Appreciate it. I think we got some really great insight from you.
I feel very vindicated.
Especially you dealing with the time zone difference. So appreciate that. Hopefully, maybe we can have you on again throughout the summer. It's gonna be a pretty. I mean, you guys watch Euros, so you'll have something to talk about. It's gonna be quiet for me. thanks, man. I really appreciate it. And sorry, Snacks, you were
So before we go and I start doing our plugs, Alfie, if you want to give us your plugs, tell the people where they can find you and support your work.
I just want to say obviously thank you for having me on. This has been great fun. Obviously my TikTok is at Mazala. You can find me roaming around outside Buckingham Palace if you ever come around here. I don't really have much to say. Just thank you for coming. Thank you for inviting me even.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Hopefully, you know, we can work out a schedule to get you back on during the summer, during like when the transfer window is actually going on, or maybe some Euros recap. You can catch me on Twitter at SnackMite. You can catch Eames at the Faubre, and you can catch Colin at El Chico Uno. I will take you up on that Buckingham Palace visit, Alfie. You can catch the United Pulse Pod at United Pulse Pod. Thanks for listening. It's been an amazing episode. I'd say probably one of our best yet, if not our best. But catch us on the next one.
Peace.